everyone. Anthony Fantano here, internet's busiest music nerd. Hope you're doing well, and it is time for another episode of the Needle Drop Podcast, our weekly review roundup podcast where we give you the best opinions and takes that have come up throughout the week on our The Needle Drop and Fantano channels. This week's episode is stacked with reviews. We have album review after album review after album review of the new record from Future, Wizard, which is actually one of my favorite Future releases so far. Going to be talking about the new Toro y Moi record, Outer Peace, the new James Blake album, which has some wonderful, beautiful, gorgeous tear-jerking ballads on it that you gotta hear. Also talking about this new wonderful collaborative record between Aesop Rock and Tobacco of Black Moth Super Rainbow, teaming up for some really weird, grimy, abstract hip-hop tunes. Talking about the new Sharon Van Etten record as well, Remind Me Tomorrow, which is one of the New York-based songwriter's boldest and most versatile records yet. Also, a few track reviews, one of the new J. Cole cut, Middle Child, and Vampire Weekend has come through with a brand new single titled Harmony Hall that I want to talk up as well. And that is going to be the episode. So get ready, relax, chill out. Whatever podcast platform you're on where you're listening to this, leave us a rating or a like or a review, whatever you can do to spread the word, and enjoy. Ba-bam. And it is time for a review of the brand new Future album, Future Hendrix Presents The Wizard. This is the latest full-length album from Atlanta, Georgia hip-hop phenomenon Future. Ever since Future popped up on the trap radar earlier this decade, he's been nothing but a bona fide hit machine. Same damn time, mask off, turn on the lights, move that dope. The song Jumpman, the collaborative cut off of his album with Drake, just to name a very select few. And Future seems to churn out so many bangers just by virtue of putting out so much material on the whole. And even though Future does put out a lot of music, his ratio to what hits and what doesn't is definitely better than that of his contemporaries who are putting out as much material. Most likely because he works with a very simple, bold, effective formula that just works. Future's husky and rappy croons that usually barrel right through the auto-tune that his voice is soaked in. He also tends to hop on some very blunt and trippy instrumentals. Not to mention he was pushing trap in more psychedelic directions before Travis Scott was making waves with Rodeo. So Future has been a lot of things across his career so far. Incredibly catchy, consistent, distinct, and ahead of the curve. Really everything but versatile, which has pretty much worked against every Future project so far, in my opinion. Because if I can boil Future's style or his biggest shortcoming down to one sentence, it would be a pretty good idea stretched out to the point where it's lost its appeal. Which is sad, because I do think Future does have a pretty distinct sound, and his albums and mixtapes could be improved greatly just with some very simple changes and additions to his usual formula. And for the most part, The Wizard does present those changes. Now, don't get me wrong here, I'm not saying that Future has turned over a new leaf and he's become a completely different artist. The lyrics on this record are very flashy and braggy, a lot of nods to money and sex and dope. Occasionally some clever wordplay or some introspection over a struggle that he's gone through or going through. Sonically on this thing, you're still going to hear a lot of warbly auto-tune vocals and trap beats and wavy vibes. But you know what? Not every song on this record is shooting for the same vibe. There's a pretty good mix of aggressive and gritty and also surreal bangers on this thing. Some passionate ballads too, if you can believe it, where Future is almost having like an emotional internal monologue. Future's vocal style, his singing voice, is still not going to be for everybody, but it's there. Especially on the track Crazy But It's True, where I love Future's flow on this thing, especially on the hook where it sounds like he's almost out of breath. It's crazy, but it's true. The song essentially sees him ranting about being owed respect for his influence because there are few artists, in my opinion, that have been bitten as mercilessly by his contemporaries as Future. Meanwhile, the instrumentals are a bit more detailed this time around, offer some prettier layers than I think we've heard on past Future works. Occasionally, they get kind of weird, as do Future's flows. I also think Future's gotten a lot better on this record at throwing a catchy idea out there, and if he doesn't have any way of extending it beyond a few minutes of novelty in a single song, he just kind of ends it there. No kind of dragging a single repetitive, redundant idea out for 5 minutes or 4 minutes and change to the point where I just get sick of it. Really, the only track that approaches that for me is the opening cut, Never Stop. And even though Future, as he starts to approach that 5 minute mark, he begins to lose me, there are still a lot of worthwhile things about this song. I do like the pretty and glamorous instrumental. The flow Future presents is ever-changing, as this is one of a few cuts on here where it seems like he's in the middle of an emotional rant. The following Jumpin' on a Jet, by comparison, goes much harder, even though I'm not really crazy about this one either. Not because it goes on too long, but it's one of several tracks on here that by all means just seems like Future by the numbers, Stick to the Models, and Ain't Coming Back. Just a few songs that seem like they could have been slipped into any number of Future projects and they wouldn't have sounded out of place. Just, again, very average for Future. Digging deeper into the record, though, Future actually hits a really great stride with this album, especially in the first leg. The song Rocket Ship, I love the eerie, minimal vibe of this track. The evil and smooth bass, the chilling chorus vocals that pop in on the second half, and Future's mantra, I've been popping since my demo, bitch. One of this record's many hilariously egotistical phrases that are just fried into my brain. Future goes melodic on the following track, Temptation, which actually features some really nice vocal harmonies and some kind of quirky vocal samples as well. I mean, at its core, this song very much feels like Future's usually clunky and weirdly melodic style, but it's layered out to the point where it's got some beautiful harmony and body to it. It's kind of refined, and if we look at the lyrics, they seem almost confessional on some bars, where Future kind of gets into his inability to deal with his own temptations. The song Crushed Up is pure eargasmic euphoria. The chimey, swirling arpeggios in both channels, the distant, funny reed melodies, plus the hypnotic rhythms and Future's mantra on this track, diamonds crushed up in the face, I could see it. Yeah, there's a lot of flash and materialism throughout the bars on this track, but the way Future goes on to describe it, combined with the instrumental, it seems dreamlike and surreal. Like Future isn't rapping about his real life or an experience that he's had, but more like a psychedelic vision. The song FNN sounds like the exact True Blue formula for a Future hit, complete with an earworm hook, FNN, FNN. But the song has been built up with these incredible synth layers to give it this kind of panoramic widescreen feel. Also, there is a heavy and aggressive beat switch in the second half of this track that's like, what? What? Future's doing beat switches now? What? The song literally just explodes into banger mode in the second half, and this is one of actually several tracks on this record that feature some really cool quality beat switches, and that's something, in my opinion, that is so refreshing to hear from Future. I love it on the song Baptize. I love it on the incredibly funny and tense Talk Shit Like a Preacher. Future also peppers the track list in the second half of this record with some weird moments that kind of stand out for their oddity, like the song Overdose, where, yeah, the instrumental's a little repetitive and everything, but Future's flow on this cut is it's a little relentless, and there are multiple times mid-rap where he's kind of stopping to laugh at the line that he just said, like he's kind of just having a giggle at his own verse. Not one of my favorite tracks on the record, but certainly stands out for that weird characteristic alone. Then there's also the song Goin' Dummy, which features this strangely cute vocal melody, maybe one of the cutest to ever pop up in a Future song. I love the track's slightly sunburnt, but also wintry synth leads that kind of overlap, cascading over one another with a delay. The instrumental sounds like a trap remix of my favorite SNES game's winter level music. And also another track on this record that feels wonderfully dreamy. Then Future goes totally unhinged on the song Face Shot. Future delivers one of his most amped performances on the entire record here, and I love the incredibly grimy instrumental and the slightly industrial synths on the mix too. It's like there's a kind of adventurous progression to the entire project where Future seems to be taking more risks and doing more weird stuff as the album moves along. However, he does save some of the worst moments on this record for last, especially on the closing cut where his flow just starts to slur to the point where he's almost unintelligible, which is something that I didn't really care for in much of his earlier work. Believe it or not, Future has done a lot better in recent years to be a bit more readable, lyrically speaking, in his songs, which I really do appreciate. And not that I'm against things in general like mumble rap, especially when it comes comes to an artist like Future because much of the time the appeal of his music boils down to the energy and the vibe of it. But when your articulation is so off that your syllables lose punctuation and your flow doesn't really have that strong of a sense of rhythm and pacing, a lot of what you're rapping and a lot of what you're saying can seem very samey. However, that is not the case for a great deal of the material on The Wizard. It's the exact opposite. I would argue Future is actually really lively and even borders on electrifying on some of these cuts. But again, with the exception of the songs on here that seem kind of average for him, and again, that closer that features such lyrical gems as I'm Future Hendrix, but I'm not a guitarist. Oh, that's not a good one. As far as the features on this album go, like usual with Future, there aren't that many, which is something that over the years I kind of respect him for. He doesn't tend to lean all that heavily on whatever talent he can bring onto his album outside. But still, Travis Scott is on here featured on the song First Off, which I feel like this song suffers from the same problem that 90% of Travis Scott featured songs do, and that the psychedelic vibes combined with his relentless ad-libs just sort of make the track feel like a Travis Scott song that just features the artist who the song should be spotlighting because it's his song, but I digress. Then there's the song Unicorn Perp with Young Thug and Gunna, and I admit I'm kind of torn on this song. While I do love what Young Thug brings to the table, the ad-libs he throws all over the song behind Future are insane and animated and bring a lot of flavor and character to the cut. Gunna's performance, though, in the second half is absolutely boring and flabby and uninspired. He just sounds like a tired Young Thug. After saying all that, I still think Future Hendrix's The Wizard here is the most entertaining thing he's done to date. Now, keep in mind, it's maybe not his most hype release. It's not his most cutting-edge record either, like DS2. That record was certainly a sea change for psychedelic trap. I don't think The Wizard really does anything all that novel in the grander scheme of things for Future, but I do think he layers, matures, and refines his sound to the point where it's a bit more dynamic. There's a little more subtlety to it. There's a little more nuance to it. You can kind of dive into some of these tracks and get some interesting details out of them. I also think Future provides some really sticky and memorable hooks on this thing too. Gives some good vocal performances, emotional and aggressive. And I'm actually monstrously happy about that. I'm happy to hear a Future project that I can enjoy more than just a couple of tracks at a time, and that's it. While sure, still, he's not the most versatile artist under the sun, and I do think the album does have some serious lyrical shortcomings. The start of it is pretty weak. The ending of it is kind of weak as well. But that is not stopping me from feeling a light to decent 7 on this thing. Transition into the next review. Everyone join me, please, in a united prayer for the lives that we lost to Chillwave. Hipster run off, hipster run off. And it is time for a review of the brand new Toro y Moi record, Outer Peace. Yet another installment in the ever-growing and ever-changing discography of Mr. Chaz Bear, aka Toro y Moi, a songwriter and producer who is known for many things, but he's most notable for being one of the few voices that helped pioneer the short-lived internet genre known as Chillwave. And even though the genre came and went like the blog-based dog and pony show that it was, Chaz had the talent and the foresight to pivot to new sounds and new ideas as soon as possible. As he would start to dabble in synth funk and psych and indie pop and electropop, even a bit of R&B as well, he seems to come through with a different style and aesthetic with every new record, which has led to some rockiness in his discography over the years. How in love I am with a new Toro record usually depends on whether or not the direction he's going in clicks with me. I do love a lot of the impeccably smooth synth funk jams on Underneath the Pine, the sweet psych pop on What For, but I can still barely recall anything from Chaz's last album, and some of the subtle vintage boy bandisms off of his record Anything in Return, they still give me nightmares. Regardless of what Chaz has done last, I'm usually pretty intrigued to see what he's going to attempt next, especially on this new record because teasers like Ordinary Pleasure were
really delicious. Feels like we're getting more vintage grooves, more disco and synth funk vibes. Instrumentally, a bit more hardware, a bit less software. A few aspects of the instrumentation on this album sounds like something off of an old DFA Records release, but with more glamour and pizzazz and like a tropical scent and a neon color palette. And this is an influence Chaz himself references on this record, on the song Laws of the Universe, where at one point he flatly says, "James Murphy is spinning at my house." Unquestionably a highlight for me on this record, and thanks to this song and the two before it, this thing begins with some real momentum, and as it progresses, I'm just getting more and more excited. Even slightly awkward bits, like the way too loud, delayed, howling lead vocals playing throughout the intro track have kind of a cute, amateurish charm to them. However, it is not very long into the track list before Chaz just loses sight of the momentum he's built up until this point and veers left into this super flat, spacey, alternative R&B aesthetic with the mostly thankless ballad Miss Me. Overall, it's a passable track for the style. Maybe it's a bit more artsy and eerie than something you might usually hear, but this is unequivocally an awful turn in the album's flow. It's like instantly being teleported from this fun, never-ending, all-night dance party to just blankly staring into a cell phone in the dark in your room because you have nothing else better to do. And if I wanted to capture that vibe, I would just literally do that. We stray even further from God's light on the song New House. Honestly, to me, this track sounds like a transitional moment off of a Brockhampton record. With its glossy synth chords and its forlorn, boyish lead vocals, the kind of skittering beats, Chaz does make this sound and this vibe his own with a story coming out of the lyrics about his own anxieties surrounding flying and traveling, as well as with some auto-tune on his voice and some very robotic bass notes, but outside of that, it just feels like, again, a heavily Brockhampton-inspired interlude moment. It's pleasant, it's sad, but still, I kind of wonder how we got here. The track Baby Drive It Down is another moment that feels like it could have been built up a little bit. It's way too basic, rudimentary, one note, not a whole lot of progression to it. I do like some elements of it. I do like the sad, dark, plucky chords playing throughout the track, the vaguely tropical vibe, and the sort of spacious atmosphere surrounding the lead vocals. There's an enjoyable awkwardness to Chaz repeating, "Baby, drive it down for me." But still, there's not much in the way of a compelling tune or progression to this cut. It just feels like a loose idea just extended out to the length of a normal track. The song Freelance is another highlight on this record for me, mostly because it feels like we've once again been teleported back to the funky, digitized, synthed-out vibes of all of the tracks that kicked the record off. The song is really fun, the grooves are top-notch. The song Who I Am is an odd surprise in that, for me, it felt like a combination of, like some future funk, a splash of vaporwave, maybe a little bit of influence from the Buggles, you know, Video Killed the Radio Star. The track is mostly rooted in this very tight, funky synth loop. Chaz paints this groove with some silly effects and leads, tops all of that with some super cheeky vocals and lyrics and a very funny delivery that I like quite a bit. Sounds like Chaz is embodying a cartoony version of himself or something. It's simple, effective, it's fun, I just wish there was a bit more body and progression to it. And as far as an artsier take on alternative R&B goes, the track Monte Carlo featuring Wet is much better. The synthesizers woven into the mix are so heavenly and idyllic, and the lyrical angle sees Chaz diving into anxieties that he seems to have around
mass transit.
The closing cut on this record is yet another moment I found to be just okay. It's a little frigid, it's very cool, very mellow, like many closing tracks tend to be, but nothing that really ties together this very inconsistent, uneven, and mixed up album. If there's one thing I appreciate the idea of in Toro y Moi, it's the level of versatility Chaz has put into his records and his discography over the years. However, that has led to some really inconsistent releases, and I think Outer Peace, sadly, is one of them, which is really just a shame. I'm feeling a strong 5 to a light 6 on this thing. Transition
into the next review.
and it's time for a review of the brand new James Blake record, Assume Form. This is the fourth full-length album from UK-based singer, songwriter, producer, Mr. James Blake, who we haven't heard from in a while, at least in studio album form, as he has been doing quite a bit of songwriting and production behind the scenes for projects like Beyoncé's Lemonade and the Black Panther soundtrack. When Blake originally exploded onto the music scene off of a wave of Pitchfork hype, he had a style and a skill set that set him apart from every other electronic music producer and singer-songwriter of his time. He seemed equally talented at rolling out these elegant, heartfelt piano ballads, as well as futuristic electronic odysseys fusing together elements of UK bass and future garage and dubstep. And when these two streams crossed into cohesive and compelling songs, it created quite a unique sound for Blake. Now, James' first two studio records kicked off his discography really well, but he still very much sounded like an artist who couldn't quite settle on a single idea or sound or direction, a guy who maybe just refused to be pigeonholed. Not the biggest deal in the world, as it wasn't hurting the overall enjoyability of his albums up until that point. I do think Blake's inability to focus and settle on a stable sound did hurt the likability of his third album that dropped in 2016, though. The fragmented ballads and the dodgy recordings, as well as the half-baked production on this album, really did leave me feeling mostly indifferent to the whole thing. And given just how inconsistent the material on this thing is, an hour and 15 minutes is just way too long of a runtime. So I essentially came into this next record hoping James would come through with a more concrete vision. And while on Assume Form, he still can't quite get away from this temptation of being a jack of all trades, the guy who can do and incorporate whatever, he does deliver some of his best tunes yet in this track list. I do think the record does kick off with kind of a rough start, though. The title track, Assume Form, really does anything but assume form. It's a fragmented mess of meandering vocal melodies, all of these ambient piano phrases that remind me of the incidental music Brian Eno made for Windows 95, and the lyrics see James going off on an emotional diatribe that's less than gripping. The transitions the song features from one section to the next are less than fulfilling, nor do they really build up enough tension to really make any of the changes on this track gratifying. I'm similarly underwhelmed by the following track, Mile High, featuring Travis Scott and Metro Boomin. Essentially, it's just a very bland and spacey trap cut with very average input from Metro and Travis. Percussion's pretty basic, Travis's auto-tuned rapping is pretty basic, really the most standout element of the entire track, and it's almost wallpaper, are the ambient synth textures swallowing the instrumental. Then James drops in on the second half with kind of this slow, melodic, kind of rapped verse. He's like slow-mo rapping. I appreciate the attempt, but I wasn't really all that crazy about it. Thankfully, the quality of Assume Form just goes up from there. As far as collaborations go on this record, teaming up with Moses Sumney on the next cut is much more appropriate than Travis Scott, in my opinion. Not to say James shouldn't be crossing over into other genres if he wants to, but I don't know, Sumney's vocals just complement James's style so much better. Also, Metro Boomin's trap rhythms on this track are much busier and I think more intricate, unique, whereas on Mile High, it's like everybody's just kind of phoning it in. I also think James' passionate croons on this cut contrast really well with Sumney's very expressive and kind of mystical singing. I also love the instrumental's deep bass and desert string melodies. And after this cut is when James essentially lets open the ballad floodgates, which is when he truly shines. The track Into the Red kicks off with these beautiful, gorgeous, moody, string-backed vocals. It's got a great relaxing beat. It's a fantastic mix of electronic and acoustic instrumentation. But the stunner of the song is James' hypnotic refrain, "She was the gold rush, she was the gold rush," essentially likening this love that he's found to discovering endless riches. I also love the dreamy and kaleidoscopic "Can't Believe the Way We Flow." James on this track sounds like he is floating on air. He is literally high on love on this track. The squeaky, shimmery vocal samples are quite nice, the cloudy, pillowy mix, the lead vocal melody, "Can't Believe the Way We Flow." And even though I do usually enjoy Blake's abstract approach to writing songs, there are some tunes here where he's actually pretty forthright with his ideas and emotions. The song I'll Come To is like a welcoming, loving lullaby with its orchestral strings and nocturnal background vocals. The electronic beats and the haunting melodies create a very gentle atmosphere, which gives me the sensation of being rocked like a baby. Meanwhile, the lyrics on the song Power On follow a surprisingly simplistic formula for Blake. You can see them right here, essentially his preconceptions about love or this relationship that he's in being smashed repeatedly. You can just tell on this record, on so many tracks, James is right now, at least to the point of making this record, just smack dab in the middle of like this honeymoon phase of this love that he's in. And he is just packing it into his music. There are some kind of enjoyable dark patches on this record, though, like the song Are You In Love, which lyrically read to me as like somebody who's faking their way through a relationship, or at least James being in a position where he's looking for some kind of assurance from the other person, waiting for that other person to confirm to him that does she love him as much as he loves her. It seems like a budding relationship, and yet he's at a point where he's just ready to devote himself to it completely. I do love the tune, the vocals, the lyrics, the instrumentation, the layering is beautiful. The one thing I'm not too crazy about on it is the super dry, simple clap hi-hat pattern that just sticks out like a sore thumb in the most unpleasant way. Don't Miss It is a depressive little ballad that James dropped months before this album that still sounds good in the track list, featuring these heavily manipulated vocals, these watery piano chords. It features a nice linear progression, the instrumentation builds beautifully, the lyrics detail the stressors of a busy and restless mind, with James coming off almost as if he's disconnected from himself in some way. Meanwhile, the song Where's the Catch is a very dark, shadowy, and negative piece of art pop with a fantastic verse from Andre, one that he describes as petty before he goes right into it. And even though it is a very grim moment on the record, I do think this album needed something like that to balance out the more euphoric bits. And to go off of this track into another collaboration on this record, the cut featuring the one and only Rosalia. Oh my god, it's amazing. Oh, Jesus! I knew she was going to be on this record, was looking forward to hearing the feature, and it just surpassed all expectations. Not only in how gorgeously James and Rosalia's vocals just intertwine on this song, but I'm also mega impressed with the nocturnal instrumental and the tune itself. Barefoot in the mud, mud. Oh god, the song feels so just emotionally hung up and sexy. The closer on this record is not super strong in my opinion though, Lullaby for My Insomniac. It is pleasant on the ear, but not one of the more gripping and engaging tunes. It's got a lot of layers, it's got a lot of atmosphere, it has some nice vocal harmonies, it's got some ambiance to it, but not a strong tune, not a strong direction, just feels a little bland in my opinion. Still though, I would say Assume Form is an incredibly good album from James Blake, really bouncing back from his last LP a few years ago. In a way, it is still kind of held back by some of the more awkward detours that he takes toward the beginning and end of this album, but this thing easily features some of the best writing and production he's given us since the earlier part of this decade. I'm feeling a strong 7 to a light 8 on this thing. Transition into the next review. And it is time for a review of the brand new collaborative record from Tobacco and Aesop Rock, Malibu Ken. Malibu Ken, a new record and a collaborative duo consisting of lyrical mastermind Aesop Rock and Black Moth Super Rainbow Main Brain Tobacco. Two names I hope that you are familiar with at this point. If not, Aesop Rock is unquestionably one of the most creative rappers of our time. His style might not click with you, but his dense and esoteric verses and dizzying rhyme schemes are really something to behold, even on his most subpar releases. Meanwhile, Tobacco has been on the cutting edge of electronic psychedelia since Black Moth Super Rainbow broke through in the mid-2000s. Since then, he's been putting out a lot more solo material, some of which is pretty standout, especially Fucked Up Friends and Ultima 2 Massage. So essentially two of the underground's most consistent weirdos coming together for an entire project. Pretty exciting, even if it is just 10 tracks and 31 minutes. On Malibu Ken, Aesop's lyricism is sharper than ever, whether he's going on these hilarious diatribes about how gross and reclusive he is, on Corn Maze and on Tuesday. Tracks that sort of make my skin crawl and make me want to start a GoFundMe to send a cleaning service to Aesop's place like once a month for 6 hours. We also have the track Suicide Big Gulp, which is a rarely braggadocious moment for Aesop where he's talking about just like slapping planes out of the sky. There's also a moment here where he's cutely building up the mythos of his collaborator Tobacco on this one too. Almost has like a slightly MF Doom kind of quality to it. And of course, there are moments on Malibu Ken where Aesop reaches outside of himself and picks on some very strange topics that nobody else would think to even start to make a song about, like a hoarder. He just sort of finds beauty and finds utility in the weirdest stuff, stuff that most songwriters out there are completely ignoring. On Acid King, Aesop dives into the sensational Ricky Casso murder. He drops rhymes about the dude's lifestyle, the drugs he did, the music that he listened to. It's weird, it's scuzzy, it's entertaining, and somehow more informative than, like, Googling about it. The song Churro, weirdly enough, is about bald eagles living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Specifically two that were known to have nested near the city. Then a webcam was set up to observe them, and then one day they turned up on the webcam feasting on a cat that one of them had caught, which caused quite a bit of controversy. Aesop Rock spares no gory details in the lyrics, and cat lovers will most likely scream in horror at this track. Meanwhile, those with a darker sense of humor might quietly chuckle. 1 plus 1 equals 13 is a witty track diving into superstitions, with nods to 13 and glass houses and showing me a sign, blowing on dice, two lucky socks not matching. As far as Aesop goes on this thing, I don't really have that many complaints. I mean, a few of his hooks are kind of clunky, but that's about it. For the most part, his lyricism, his topics, his personality, his character, it's all great. The instrumentals, in my opinion, are really where this album falters just a little bit. The vocoder vocals and some of the choruses Tobacco brings to the table are sort of mushy and nondescript, very samey. They definitely could have popped with more defined melodies or maybe less manipulation to the vocals that kind of just took away their muscle, their detail. For the most part, the singing on his end just feels like a formless blob, just a little bit more than usual. Which, I get it, it's kind of his calling card to manipulate and layer his vocals so heavily, but it just seems like a little too much on this record. Also, I don't think the beats are really that varied across the entire record either. I mean, sure, there are some kind of aggressive spots here and there. There are some kind of low-key spots here and there, but for the most part, they are uniformly scuzzy and kind of trippy, somewhat lo-fi, a lot of buzzing synth leads and some warm chords that kind of wash over you. While the beats aren't super intricate, they do lay a really nice foundation, and they have a very freaky and colorful aesthetic that brings Aesop's verses alive. The closer, in my opinion, is kind of underwhelming, and overall the brevity of the project makes it feel a bit more like a lightning in a bottle than something that's been labored over for a very long time, or something that's just more conceptual. But I don't think that takes away from most of Malibu Ken's enjoyability. If you're looking for a hip-hop record that is tight, it's heady, it's abstract, it's witty and consistent, and has quite a bit of character to it, then I would say unquestionably give this a shot. I loved it. I wish there was a little bit more to it, more versatility, more ambition, but I still thought this record was essentially pure fun for total weirdos. I'm feeling a light to decent 8 on this thing. Transition into the next review. And it is time for a review of the brand new Sharon Van Etten record, Remind Me Tomorrow. Singer-songwriter Sharon Van Etten, she is back. Her last record, Are We There, dropped back in 2014. For a long time now, I've found Sharon's sound to be pretty intriguing, especially her vocals, which are incredibly smoky and mature. Her songs typically run the course of a slow and pensive burn, reflecting on a lot of introspective and interpersonal themes, while riding on waves of large, droning folk rock instrumentation with an indie twist. And every album Sharon has come out with since she's been signed has come through with a pretty strong set of singles and teaser tracks. Songs that would essentially convince me that what I'm about to listen to is one of the best singer-songwriter records of the year. Tracks like One Day and Serpents and Taking Chances and Magic Chords. And this new one over here is really no different, with the excellent 17 and Comeback Kid. The latter of the two see Sharon flirting with some bold organ chords, some strange sound effects, and huge booming drums. It seems like she's finally taking her music to the level of volume and pomp that you might usually hear in like an arena rock song. Thrilling vocals, dramatic lyrics, what's not to love? Meanwhile, 17 sees Sharon playing with this old school Springsteen formula. It's a grand and driving piece of piano rock with a roaring climax. And Sharon's singing on the hook of this track, downtown hotspot, halfway up this street, I used to be free, I used to be so 17. I don't think I've ever heard this much swagger on Sharon's voice ever in one of her songs. On some of these cuts, she also comes through much heavier on the synth side of things than I think she ever has before, too. Especially on Jupiter 4, which features the cycling bass synth notes, some ghostly melodies calling out in the background, too. It is a track that takes its sweet time across its 5 minutes and 14 seconds. And even though it may not hit as hard as some of the punchier cuts on here, the production is really colorful, and Sharon's singing at the center of all of it is really compelling. She is just like a shining ball of fire with some instrumental planets in orbit around her. Also, the sense of longing she delivers on this track is as heavy as the instrumentation itself on this one. Another instrumentally unlikely moment for Sharon is the cut You Shadow, which features this clunky and kind of sassy groove, what sounds like a splashy cymbal soaked in reverb. Sounds almost like a mutated version of what you might hear behind a girl group back in the day. Meanwhile, the rhythm section is colored with these dirty, distorted, sunburnt, herky-jerky guitars that sound like something off of an old Dirty Projectors record or a newer St. Vincent record, which is not too big of a surprise given that John Congleton had a hand in the production on this one. And the cherry on top with this track are the utterly disrespectful lyrics, which are most likely a metaphor, but it seems like Sharon has a particular person or something in mind as she is singing on this track, where she is just kind of going on and on about being copied, something or someone shadowing her, not knowing what to do or where to be or how to act without her illustrating or lighting the way. For me, it was unclear as to whether or not she was singing about someone or something in her personal life, or maybe even somebody on the artistic circuit, or something else entirely, but trying to draw up my own conclusions about the track is kind of half the fun. But I do want to rewind a bit in this review because I was trying to make an earlier point about Sharon's previous records. All of Sharon's albums so far have had fantastic highlights on them, but it's usually between the lines of these tracks where she sort of loses me a little bit, bogging the deep cuts of these albums down with these languishing ballads that don't have a strong sense of direction or just feel very samey across the track list. However, I was hoping that wouldn't be the case on Remind Me Tomorrow, nor did I think it would be likely given how diverse the production and the songwriting seem to be on the handful of singles that dropped. Sadly, though, there are some songs on this thing that do come off a bit like wallpaper, or just get very lost in a syrupy or stagnant performance. This happens on the song Malibu to a degree, where Sharon sort of channels her inner Lucinda Williams with some sparse pianos and vaguely country-ish instrumentation. There are some kind of unexpected analog synth passages that turn up at one point that I guess make it a little quirky, but the very measured vocal performance and nondescript melody just do not shine through. The song Memorial Day is another track that to me stuck out a bit because of its sound palette. The track feels like I have embarked on a droning psychedelic spirit journey. I am traveling through the desert or an endless cavern of some sort. Nearly every piece of instrumentation in the mix is just soaked with reverb. And I guess there's some kind of cool sounds and embellishments to the whole thing, but the tune at the core of all of it is just non-existent. It just feels like a very loose idea padded out with a drab jam session. However, I think the worst offender on this entire LP has to be the opening track, I Told You Everything, a song that is so sparse and so slow that it's really difficult to glean much from it at all. I do like some of the plucky lead melodies, and I do like some of the vocal harmonies, but these just seem like scraps and bits of seasoning on a very, very blank canvas. The closing track here is pretty quirky and pleasant. It's got these skittering lo-fi rhythms and warm bass and slinky guitar leads. Sharon is singing in these very high, nasally vocals we don't usually hear her deliver in. The whole thing feels like a somewhat awkward embrace of like this old-school 90s bedroom indie pop style, but it's still kind of enchanting. The only other cut on this thing I would say is a true stunner is probably the song Hands. This is one of the loudest and most powerful and most climactic cuts on the entire record. Could have even been the closer. The mix is really thick and heavy and hazy. Sharon's voice just cuts through it like a lightning bolt. Put your hands on your lover. The track is a pretty bold proclamation, and I think one of the hardest hitting songs she's put out in a long time. time. And that's really all the stuff that stood out to me about this record the most. It's a pretty straightforward release of 10 tracks. It's a little all over the place in terms of style and pacing and songwriting quality, but overall another solid album from Sharon Van Etten. If you are looking for a singer-songwriter record that presents a pretty wide variety of ideas and takes its time, is a little texturally adventurous, and features some solid vocal performances, give it a shot. I'm feeling a light to decent 7 on this thing.
Hey buddy, did you hear the news? It's track reviews.
Mr. J. Cole has just come out with a new piece of music, a brand new single. He has been hyping it up. It is titled Middle Child. And let's see what it has to offer, assuming we're going to hear a J. Cole record at some point this year in 2019, most likely. Everybody's freaking out about this track online. Let's see what all the hubbub is about. Let's go. All right. Dang. I do genuinely think this is one of J. Cole's better tracks in a while. Let me start off from maybe the simplest aspect of the entire song, and that's just the instrumental. It's a pretty straightforward trap beat, though I do like the pretty anthemic horn sections that are worked through the track. I think they do bring a serious tone and a maturity and a grandiosity to the message that J. Cole is trying to bring to the table. I do think the chorus is a bit generic, in my opinion. It sounds like a touch of autotune or something. Gets into a J. Cole singing voice on that moment. And I just poured something in my cup. I've been wanting something I can feel. I'm not so crazy about the tone of his singing voice at that point in the track, even though I do think the hook itself is effective. But let's get into the nitty-gritty here and just the lyrics and the theme of this track. Middle Child. For a long time, I and many other people have been talking about J. Cole's music and have poo-pooed it or written him off and said he's kind of middle of the road. You know, he's not so highbrow. He's not so lowbrow. He's just somewhere in the middle. He's not saying the most thoughtful or conscious stuff you've ever heard, nor is he making the most forward-thinking hip-hop out there as far as like instrumentals and just overall vibe and aesthetic goes. He's not as artsy as a Kendrick Lamar. He doesn't have a To Pimp a Butterfly in his discography, you know, but he's clearly not like trying to dumb it down to the point where he's saying absolutely nothing at all. I feel like J. Cole is doing that in a way that's really effective on this track over here, because he does pretty much acknowledge that he's like the middle child. Not only is he in a position where he can sort of make this music that has a conscious edge to it, but also have a solid feature on a 21 Savage record. But again, he has sort of the ears and the attention of these kids who also listen to Kodak Black, whereas your average Kodak Black fan may not really care all that much about whatever the hell Kendrick Lamar is saying. So philosophically, and as far as the content of his music, J. Cole is very much the middle child in the genre right now. And he also portrays himself as being a middle child in that he feels like he's stuck between these two worlds of, hey, I'm talking and hanging with Jay-Z, I can commiserate with, and I take so much inspiration from the old guard of hip hop, but then also I can appear on these records with these kids who just kind of make fun, dumb trap music and stuff. And I do give J. Cole credit for not only trying to inhabit these two lanes artistically, but in his personal efforts trying to reach out to this section of the hip-hop audience, doing a lengthy interview with Lil Pump, even if the execution of it was really awkward and maybe they didn't have the most thoughtful back and forth and stuff, and Lil Pump didn't really have much to say because he doesn't really seem like that introspective of a dude. It's still pretty cool of J. Cole to try to reach out to that generation instead of just writing them off completely and, you know, just thinking they're too stupid to be talked to as if they're adults. You know, J. Cole, I think, is one of the few artists out there who is
talking to these kids like, you know, they are adults, not just like they're idiots listening to music that's that tells them to take Xans, you know. He's talking to them, he's communicating with them in his music as if they're mature enough to take his message, and a lot of them are. I mean, sure, maybe some people may write it off and think, J. Cole, he just kind of sounds like, once again, he's trying to be like, you know, this father figure, this counselor type figure, and give everybody some advice and some perspective. You can't really say the message he's putting out there that it's not reaching people, because, I mean, this track, the conversation around it has been explosive. And digging deeper into the lyrics on the second leg of the song, and to acknowledge J. Cole's flow on this track, it's pretty straightforward, kind of mid-paced, some triplets thrown in here and there. It's a pretty laid-back flow for J. Cole. Nothing too aggressive, certainly not anything on the level like he did with Jid. This one verse kind of got to me that he was rapping about, talking about hanging out with Jigga, had a long talk with Kodak, reminded me of people who I knew from his hometown, and then going on to say that, you know, I wish they had more guidance, we're caught in this cycle of jail, spending birthdays inside a cell, coming out from this bloodline of trauma, raised by our mamas, Lord, we got to heal, so on and so forth. I mean, to me, that's unbearably real. You know, there's something just so pointed and incredibly accurate about all of that. And, you know, I feel like that message isn't really being boiled down effectively by some of the more conscious voices in hip hop right now. While this track may not be the most forward-thinking or out there or adventurous from a flow or a instrumental perspective, I can at least acknowledge the song is catchy. It is kind of compelling. J. Cole's voice and his delivery is pretty forlorn, which I think fits the tone of the track quite a bit. And he does get to the heart of some hard facts and reality. Some of the bars he dropped earlier about not getting into beef or some other covert reasons, hey, I want to sell more records and so on and so forth. That's not him, not something he'd do. That was pretty cool as well. But yeah, generally likable track. Thought it was a cool single. Yeah, it's got a bit of an attitude, and J. Cole does rap in such a way where he does feel like he's in the position to, or at least he should be kind of guiding and, you know, trying to light a better path for people to walk down. Which many may see as pretentious or, you know, just intrusive in a way. But honestly, he doesn't come off that pushy or disrespectful in this track. Unlike in previous moments where he's talked about such things that he does on the song, he seems to come from a bit more of an understanding place. And I think I'll just leave it at that. Tune and flows are okay. Beat is pretty good. The message is really what makes the track altogether worthwhile. Maybe you love the message, maybe you don't. Either way, I think that will greatly impact exactly how much you get out of this song. Over here next to my head is another video that you can check out. Hit that up or the link to subscribe to the channel. Anthony Fantano, J. Cole, Middle Child, forever. And it is time for a track review. Yes, a double feature track review. A new album from the band Vampire Weekend. The Ivy League boys are back. Father of the Bride is the title of the new record. Miraculously enough, it would seem that they have kind of drifted away from this classic visual over here of the thick white border in a vintage photo that you might get sued for into something else. But that's neither here nor there. They have a couple of new songs, so let's just give them a shot. Let's see what the boys are offering this time around. Is it a new direction? Is it something stale? I guess we will see. We're going to listen to Harmony Hall, then we are going to listen to 2021, and give commentary on each of them. So let's go. All right, there we go. First of the two tracks over here, Harmony Hall from Vampire Weekend. Ooh, stop that. Harmony Hall, Vampire Weekend. Liked this track quite a bit. Thought it was a good single. Thought it had kind of a glitzy, slightly overblown, very luscious, but fun rock and roll anthem feel to it. Kind of reminded me of like, you know, some Rolling Stones, can't always get what you want type stuff, you know, music from that era of the band's career where, you know, you've just got these huge soaring guitars and pianos dancing across the rock instrumentation, maybe some thick background harmonies to sort of back it all up and just make it feel really grand and over the top and powerful. The tune at the core of it is really solid. Ezra's voice is as boyish and as sweet as ever. And in usual Vampire Weekend fashion, the band does what they do in terms of just working these cute little regal piano string passages in between various sections of the song. Yeah, it's cute. It's fun. It's rich in more ways than one. It's very pretty and it's pretty soulful for Vampire Weekend as well. Usually I find their music to be quite quaint, a little fun, sometimes a little sad, but this is one of the few songs I think they pulled together that I hear some real soul coming out of it. And yeah, just generally a good, fun track, a nice, lengthy, fulfilling 5-minute jam. And I do love some of the lyrics coming out of this track as well. The mantra of not wanting to live like this, but not wanting to die certainly has, an unrest to it. That I thought hit pretty hard. Now let's give a listen to this next track. Not sure if it's going to be as deep or as substantive in terms of its sound or its message, because it is just a minute and 38. Could just be a weird little B-side. I guess we'll see. But Vampire Weekend 2021, let's give it a shot. Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's a cute little lo-fi ballad with some sweet synthesizers, some very roughly mixed guitars that kind of dominate the mix quite a bit, some very thuddy and deep kick drums kind of beating their way through the track, giving it a little bit of a pulse, and some kind of chilling and beautiful vocal samples playing their way through the track too. Loved Ezra's vocalizations. Thought the what little lyrics there were on this track, you know, 2021, what do you think about me? What do you think about us? Was kind of cute. I'm not exactly sure what thematically the song is getting at. I do admit that, but you know, it seemed like a beautiful little moment. Not sure if we're going to hear anything more out of this song or this idea or this rough concept of a track in the future. Certainly seems like the start of something, or maybe even a nice cool down moment in the middle of a good track list. But not as much to say about this track other than that it has some very beautiful ideas, but just a rudimentary delivery, build, and mix. So, you know, I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, Harmony Hall, killer track, and definitely has me excited for a potentially thicker, more luscious, more instrumentally deep, and maybe more mature Vampire Weekend this time around on the new record. And I guess we will leave it at that. Dug this song quite a bit. Definitely one of my favorite tracks of the week. Gonna leave you guys a video over here that you can check out next to my head. Also a link to subscribe to the channel if you want. I will see you in the next one. Anthony Fantano, Harmony Hall, Vampire Weekend, forever. And that is going to be it for this latest episode of the Needle Drop Podcast. Thank you. I want to give a shout out to Jonah, who puts and assembles all of these episodes together. Also, follow us on social media, twitter.com/TheNeedleDrop, youtube.com/TheNeedleDrop, youtube.com/Fantano, Instagram, afantano, and make sure to hit up theneedledrop.com as well to not miss, never miss, never, ever, ever miss a single piece of content that we put out throughout the week. Thank you very much for being here. We will see you guys in the next one. More reviews, more thoughts, more opinions. The Needle Drop Podcast, Anthony Fantano. Make sure to like, review, subscribe wherever you're listening to us today. And yeah, that's it. Forever.